You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The last 2 hours today is Jerry Day, and he's got several websites, and I'll post them in the chat room. JerryDay.com, and I'll post the rest of them in the chat room. But he has a lot to, he's always had a lot to tell us about smart meters and for so many other things that are that are put into our lives that we need to take a stand against. So do we have our guest, Jerry? Okay. So anyway, our first guest, truly, you really do need to buy that book and by all means watch the movie. And it's kind of an amazing thing that transpired because of his work and because of the things that he did, the chances that he took, the sacrifices that he made. He's a hero. He really is. He's a hero for doing what he did. Absolutely. So, okay, we got Jerry's answering machine. I did send him a notice or an email. I always send an email to my guests a couple of days before. So why don't we open the phone lines and we'll take some phone calls and perhaps talk about what we heard in the last hour. And so feel free to call in. And of course the number is 800-313-9443, and talk about the situation. And it's not just DuPont; that's just one company. And we also, of course, talked about 3M. And I think you can apply this to other companies, other corporations, and for instance, all of the alphabet departments of the government, the FDA, the EPA, all of those companies, all of those entities are supposed to be protecting us, protecting our health, protecting our food, protecting the environment. But when you get right down to it, they just absolutely seem to be protecting the corporations and corporate profits. And I think that that's what is so awful is that the corporations are the ones that are making the money, but they're making us sick. And, it takes people like our guest, our last guest, to expose these things and to tell us what they're doing. And to have the fortitude and the ability. He had the ability. He was in the right place at the right time. And certainly, I do believe in synchronicity. One of my very favorite films of all times, was Aaron Brockovich. And I'm sure that a lot of people, have seen that film. And it's one that I would watch over again. I don't go to the movies much. Well, I don't go to the movies hardly at all. But there are certain films that do, that are educational, that tell us a lot about what we can do to, or they expose a lot of things. And certainly, Aaron Brockovich did that very much in the same way that Robert Blott did. And what he did was help everybody. And And there are ways, I think, that people can help their situation, the situation with health. I think there are different protocols, different modalities that people can use in order to get better. And I think that sometimes we take chances with our health without actually knowing what we're doing. We take risks that we shouldn't be taking. For instance, if you drink distilled water, don't use plastic. I went through my house several years ago, and I got rid of all the aluminum. I don't use aluminum foil. I don't use aluminum cooking utensils. I don't use anything with aluminum, period. It does not exist in my house. Also, plastic. I don't put water in plastic jugs. I don't use plastic. I got rid of all of that stuff. I threw it away. And you just have to sweep through your house and clean up your own environment first, and then move forward. But try to incorporate things into your life. You do? Perfect. All righty. Our guest is with us, our second guest. And our second guest is Jerry Day. And he has worked so hard in so many things regarding smart meters. And he's got a couple of websites, takebackyourpower.net and jerryday.com. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Anna, I want to do a correction there. Take Back Your Power is not my website. I'm at freedomticker.com, and okay. I'm at emfhelpcenter.com.
Okay. Freedom Ticker. Okay. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Well, how are you today?
Yeah, very good, very good. What's on the ticket for discussion today?
Well, I think that everyone is very concerned, or at least should be concerned, about this crazy vaccine that Bill Gates is attempting to enforce everybody to take. And there are things that you have written, ways that you have indicated, I believe, at Freedom Taker, for not allowing yourself to be vaccinated, and
right.
ways that you can keep from being vaccinated, documents that you can sign or file. So tell us a little bit about those documents, if you would.
Okay, well, there are a couple we have posted, free download documents at freedomticker.com. And one of them is you could refer to as a conditional acceptance. And this is kind of a legal trick, a legal maneuver that sometimes becomes necessary when someone is pushing something that they're not really legally entitled to do or morally entitled to do. And that would be vaccines in this case. So we were concerned about what happens if vaccines become mandatory or they have some way of committing some force or coercion in order to get people to accept vaccines. Obviously, constitutionally, obviously, morally, you have no obligation to take an injection into your body without your consent. And but there are those people who are actually not aware of that and who don't seem to want to follow what's right or what's legal. And they have managed to convince a certain percentage of the population that vaccines are the answer to something to which actually our personal immune systems is the answer. And vaccines are not natural, they're not right, they're not ethical, they're not reliable, they're not, they can't be proved to be safe, they can't be proved to be effective. So there are a lot of people who are very aware of that. So the conditional acceptance form is one that says to whoever may be offering you this vaccine or telling you that they are going to force you to have it, you don't want to outright refuse it, because then the discussion becomes not about the vaccine, but about the fact that you're refusing something that supposedly you're legally required to do. So you give them what's called a conditional acceptance. And that is a form that says, sure, I accept your vaccine on the condition that you can show me that it is safe and effective and that there is no risk, and that if there is any risk whatsoever, that you personally will be accepting full liability for all costs and damages of any harm that that vaccine may cause me.
Simply
protecting your safety in that way, your health and safety in that way, by this conditional acceptance, you have now put the ball in their court, where you are accepting the vaccine if they can show that it's safe and if they can show that they will be liable. And that's not something that anyone is prepared to do. The police won't pay you if they damage you with forcing you to have a vaccine. The nurse won't pay you if they damage you for having the vaccine. Your legislator, who might pass some mandate law, will not pay you if they damage you with the vaccine. Well, wait a minute. You can vaccinate people if it's safe and if you're responsible for the damage, but you certainly cannot vaccinate people if you're not responsible for the damage and if it's not safe and if it's not effective. So that's simply a very reasonable protection of your health and safety, and so that conditional acceptance can be enforced, because if someone is telling you, no, I will not be liable for the damage and I will not assure the safety of this product, then on what grounds do you have to administer that to me forcibly or non-consensually? If you're admitting that it may be dangerous, or you're not taking responsibility for the harm it caused, then how can you say that I can be legally required to accept this from you? You can't say that, because you're in the same breath, by refusing the conditional acceptance, they're admitting that there might be risks. So wow. this is a very powerful thing to do. And when you offer the conditional acceptance and it is refused, and they say, no, I'm going to give you that vaccination anyway, even though I'm not going to take responsibility for the damage it causes, even though I can't assure its safety, I'm going to make you do it anyway, then you're going to say, no, I'm going to refuse. Because now your refusal is on the basis of them failing to show its safety and them failing to offer liability. So it's not your refusal on the basis of just violating the law. It's your refusal on the basis of their violating the law. So this is an important step. So there are two forms involved. The first form is the conditional acceptance, and the second form is the refusal. And this also can apply to COVID testing or any other medical procedure, because it actually, underneath it all, according to Nuremberg principles and many laws, it simply is not lawful to administer medicine to someone without their consent, and it's not lawful to administer medicine without a physician's license. And your legislators certainly do not have physician's licenses and certainly have no authority to administer medicine and can be put in prison for practicing medicine without a license. And that would be probably the third and final step of this whole thing. Is you just take someone to prison. You file them with charges of forcing medical treatment without consent of the patient and without physician's license qualifications, and you say, we got to get this person into prison. You know, if they're going to be prancing around among us telling us we have to be vaccinated with someone and they're not even a doctor, we got to get this person off the streets.
Now, what about the law that was just passed in Colorado regarding vaccines? They've decided that everyone's going to be vaccinated, or that children are going to be vaccinated, or they can't.
Obviously, if you're in Colorado, you need to immediately file some sort of criminal complaint against anyone who has purported to pass something like that. If these are legislators who have determined this, this law. And I haven't read the wording of that law. It'd be very important to look at the wording of that law, absolutely word for word, and see, are they really actually trying to compel vaccination, and are they or are they not licensed physicians? That's all you need to know, are those two things. If they're not really compelling the vaccination, then they're giving you some way to refuse it. If they are, then they must be licensed physicians, and they must have the consent of the patient for what they do. And if they don't have that, you file a criminal complaint. You literally go to the police and say, this person, I want investigated, I want taken into custody, I want put under an indictment, I want to put under investigation, I'm going to get a prosecution going. I have been threatened with unlawful medical procedure, obviously in violation of international law.
Wow. That is amazing. And Richard Pan in California, he's behind a lot of the vaccine policies in California. And he is a pediatrician, was a pediatrician, may still be a pediatrician, and became a legislator. So there's a lot of laws that people just accept without realizing that they could refuse it. And of course, a lot of things too are kind of snuck into things. For instance, if you go and get your license or renew your driver's license or get your license for the first time, they ask you if you want to be an organ donor. And so you're actually signing up at the DMV to be an organ donor, which is obviously a medical procedure. And without a moment's thought, you could say yes.
Well, that is a big mistake if you ever do that.
Because oh, absolutely.
If you look at, I'm sure you know this, or maybe your listeners know this. If you look at what organ donation entails, it is not something that they do after you die.
It's something they do while you're alive. Yes.
You must be alive to donate your organs.
Yes.
And there are case after case after case where people, and they make a fortune when you do this, when they harvest your organs. And there's case after case where they have incentive to remove your organs, declare your death for other causes, and then, make their fortune on your donated organs and extract them, remove them from your body while you are alive. And in many cases, it's not even possible medically for you to be under anesthetic when they remove your organ. They have to remove it while you're alive and conscious. And, of course, depending on the organ, at that moment you pass away. But they say, oh, no, she was in a car accident, and that's what killed her. And we made, $2.5 million on her organs, and, that wasn't what killed her. What killed her was the car accident.
Right.
So this is not something anyone should ever allow, to create this moral hazard where someone is going to have to harvest your organs while you're alive in order to complete this program. This is how it must be done, and this is what you're agreeing to if you offer to donate your organs.
Right, and actually the hospital makes $11.2 million per...
Okay, that would depend on which organs they harvest or what they... doing,
right.
I would assume, but there are millions of dollars to be made. These are free organ donations from people involuntarily who are actually killed by that donation, and so this is not a pretty thing. This is not something that people should be even asked or required to do. I mean, there may be some very, very rare situation where that may be appropriate, but it has to be fully informed and fully consensual, and generally it would be something that would be very, very detrimental to the last phases of a person's life in terms of how it would feel to have organs harvested from your body without anesthetic and while you're still alive.
Right. We've talked about that on this program before.
Right.
Now you, okay, we're going to a really quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Oh, hi. Excuse me. Back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Jerry Day. Website is jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. And let me just share an email from a listener. She says, the Moderna product about to be forced on everyone is not a vaccine. Instead, it is a new technology with no track record of safety and is synthetic RNA to perform genetic modification. Calling this stuff a vaccine misleads the public into believing it might be safe. What are your views on that?
Are you asking me, Deanna?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's been some discussion about not only is not even DNA material, altered material. There's discussion about they're going to be identification, sort of marker identification dyes and whatnot into this thing they're calling a vaccine. And I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Catherine Austin Fitz, who's researched.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, this is not a vaccine, you know, and so calling it a vaccine is just basically pure deception. And you know, there's even if it were a vaccine, they're coming up with research that indicates that this particular COVID-19 does not behave like other pathogens, and that it doesn't allow long-term or permanent immunity in any way, either by your body or by a vaccine. So there's the only thing a vaccine does is provide immunity. So if the pathogen itself is not susceptible to immunity, can't be controlled that way, then there's no sense to do a vaccine in the first place. So the question is, what is this thing? Who made it? How did they make it? Why did they make it? What is it doing to us? And who can be held accountable for releasing this into the public? That's something that, for some reason, is very lost from the discussion. And I think we've just started to hear some things about that where everybody's blaming China. Well, China's a country. China didn't release it into the public. There are individuals who did. They may be Chinese. They may be something else. But those individuals need to be held accountable. There are markers in this pathogen that indicate that this was a lab-produced element, that it contains certain aspects that are actually laboratory-modified in order to make them that human bodies will be more susceptible to this pathogen. I think there's a term for it the pathogen is able to lock into the human metabolic system more easily because it was chemically and biologically altered to do so. So this is a pathogen that was deliberately created to be to make human beings sick. It was made in a way so that it would be more damaging to human beings, and it was done so by a laboratory, by scientists, by technicians. The pathogen carries those markers. It was modified with what they call the CRISPR method, genetic modification method, and wherever it was derived from, it was given human markers, human aspects, so that it would be more toxic and more dangerous to human beings. So there's a crime here, and someone is answerable for that crime. So we'll have to deal with what this pathogen does to us ourselves. That's an individual choice, but we as a society, we have to deal with the people who caused this and who created this and who re- release this into the public. And until our public officials understand that, realize that, talk about that in public, and actually get busy doing something about that, they have no business calling themselves public officials. They're not serving or protecting us at all. They have to go after the people who caused this.
Right, like Fauci and
well, we don't know. We don't know who created the. I don't think Fauci was in a lab himself creating this pathogen. Fauci may certainly has been complicit in the improper public instructions of how to deal with it. He's obviously, you know, promoting his own wealth and power and doing very bad things. And yes, you could probably certainly prosecute Anthony Fauci, but it might be for something different than creating the COVID-19 pathogen. So our law enforcement and our justice system has a lot of work to do and a lot of catching up to do with people like that, but especially those who would have introduced this pathogen into our public spaces.
Exactly. All righty, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All right, we are back with our guest, Jerry Day, and his website is jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. He's got so much information on this website. He even talks about the census workers, which is very interesting also. But you talk about EMFs, you cover everything, smart meters, all kinds of information. But the vaccine situation is really kind of in the forefront here with counties, states wanting to vaccinate people with God only knows what, and also the medical testing. They are testing people repeatedly. I know some people have been tested 3 or 4 times and tested negative each time. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there is no real foolproof test for COVID-19. They don't even have, as far as I know, a real hard definition of what that is. And I was looking up this thing, which I was a little sketchy on, which is how human cells become susceptible to COVID-19, or how COVID-19 was made to sort of adapt to the human body. There's a website I found here, Gene NG News, that has a discussion about this. It says human cells and mice cells, which each express their own version of angiotensin converting enzyme to the membrane-bound receptor that serves as a convenient means of ingress for SARS-CoV-2. So this is one way to make it more susceptible to humans is processing it with mice cells. Because human ACE2 happens to be more welcoming than mouse ACE2, human COVID-19 isn't easily recapitulated into ordinary mouse models. Genetically engineered mouse models, however, promise to advance studies of COVID-19, whether they aim to detail disease mechanisms or evaluate COVID-19 vaccines and therapeutics. To ensure that SARS-CoV-2 gets a warm welcome in laboratory mice, scientists representing several research institutions in China have generated a mouse model expressing human ACE2 using CRISPR-Cas9 knock-in technology. The new model captures several features of human COVID-19, including the development of interstitial pneumonia, higher cytokine levels, and greater lung damage with increasing age and gastrointestinal systems symptoms. So this is exactly what COVID-19 is. We're being told by the fear mongers this is what it's doing. It is developing interstitial pneumonia, cytokine storms and greater lung damage. And that's exactly what the pathogen was designed to do. And it was designed to do so in a laboratory. It was not something that evolved in nature or could have evolved in nature in the way that it has been presented.
Wow.
So,
I thought, well, even a cold is a coronavirus, but this is totally different.
Yeah, COVID-19 and what they call SARS-CoV-2 is something very different from coronavirus. Coronavirus is a mild flu at best, and probably my guess is between 60 and 90% of the population carry coronavirus already. And so whatever it is, as a flu epidemic, people are, number one, generally not going to get very sick from it, and number two, are probably already immune to it. COVID-19, or what they call SARS-CoV-2, is something very different, and that is the thing that apparently has these people in hospitals unable to breathe and suffocating and being put on respirator machinery inappropriately. They need oxygenation metabolism, oxygen metabolizing therapies, not respiratory therapies. And so the respirator equipment kills them, and they're killing people consistently. You know, something like 90-some percent, I can't remember the exact number, but it was above 90% of people who are dying once they are put onto a respirator, because a respirator is not the right therapy for COVID-19.
Right. That website is GeneNGNews.com, correct?
Let me read that exactly. So Gene, the word Gene, G-E-N-E, NGNews.com.
Yes, okay. That's what I put in the chat room. Okay.
It's just something that I stumbled on a search here, you know, trying to get a little more detailed scientific information on that. But the testing is there's no such thing as reliable testing for this. And if they say you're positive for coronavirus, that has nothing to do with being positive for COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2. So they're playing with these words and throwing out a lot of junk science and trying to get everyone afraid and trying to classify everyone who has coronavirus, which is almost everyone, to classify them as somehow having this much more serious pathogen, much more serious pathology.
To the point that they're forcing people to wear masks.
Right, right. The mask wearing, to my understanding and by what I've seen, is absolutely ridiculous. It's not helping anyone. It's not stopping any disease. In fact, I don't know if your listeners know about Peggy Hall in Orange County, who has been researching a lot of this and bringing a lot of this forward. And I just saw a video of hers today, which talks about how OSHA, we have this Occupational Safety and Health organization that enforces the workplace standards and limits on different exposures. OSHA says that a cloth mask absolutely does not protect against airborne pathogens, does not protect against disease. It causes disease and ailments on its own, and it is not useful or appropriate for preventing bacterial or viral infection. And this is OSHA saying this, saying that you may not require an employee to wear a cloth mask all day. You may not do it. Well, if you do that, you are endangering your health, and that is a violation of OSHA's policies. So,
and she's
kudos
in California.
To Peggy Hall for finding these things.
Right. And that is good for California, but in Illinois, where I reside, you can't go to the post office without a mask. You can't go to the UPS office without a mask. Apparently there are stores that you cannot go into. It's pretty awful.
Well, that's true in California as well. That's true in California as well. And the authorities in California have not associated OSHA with what they're doing. So they just say, well, you have to wear a mask here and there and the other place and the other time. And nobody has bothered to check OSHA's regulations on that. And that's real convenient for them because apparently they don't want to.
Of course.
Yeah. So it's up to each of us individually to, either try to avoid these places or make some statement when you have to go to these places that this mask thing is not appropriate, it's not legal, it's not effective, and it can make us all sick. And there's going to be, in my view, some kind of syndromes come from this excess mask wearing. I went into a store the other day, and the girl who was working there was wearing a mask, and I said something about, gosh, I'll be glad when we don't have to wear these masks. And she says, I'll be really, really glad because I'm getting lightheaded all the time. And I said to her, if you're getting lightheaded, you're having, negative medical pathology from your mask. I said, you have to tell your employer about that. And she said, oh, no, I've got kids to support. And I went to her HR department and I said, these people are talking about getting lightheaded wearing these masks. Is there something you want to do about that? But I couldn't get a hold of anybody who cared or wanted to do anything about it. They were very sort of arrogant and abusive. It's like, why are you bothering us in our office, kind of thing. So, okay, that's the way you want to play it. I feel sorry for that particular clerk because she will have some very negative ramifications from wearing that mask 8 hours a day.
Right, and of course you're breathing your own CO2 and restricting
your
oxygen.
That's why she's lightheaded. You're getting reduced oxygen levels, but you're getting recycled pathogens from yourself. You're concentrating your pathogens in that mask and in that area around your breathing, and that's not a place you want things to collect.
Right. And I sit when I've gone to the post office, I do have a mask that has a message on it, reducing my oxygen for your comfort. And I just lift it. I don't actually wear it. I lift it, and then when I get right up to the counter, I see these one of the ladies. She wears a mask. She's lifting heavy boxes. She's working. She's running back in the back to get stuff. I'm thinking this, I'm surprised she hasn't passed out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's happening. And obviously the media will not tell us about that. But, these masks are obviously uncomfortable, obviously an inconvenience, but also very clearly dangerous to your health in certain ways. And not effective at all in doing what they are supposed to be doing. This is some kind of a psyop, getting everyone to wear masks when the officials certainly have as good information as I do. And for them to be pushing this thing, it's almost like they sort of came out with this idea. Somebody in a meeting came out with this idea. They all went with it before they really checked it out. And now that they've gone with it, now that it's gone public, they can't save face if they retract the advice or something. It's just like, well, since we told you this, we're just going to double down and tell you it's right, even though now we know it's wrong. I don't know what these public officials are thinking, but it's time to end this, and they're going to learn the hard way if they don't do it.
Right.
And, of course, it's going to be at the expense of every one of us.
Right. And of course, it's a matter of obedience. Their obedience training people to do what they're told. And that's pretty sad that there are so many people that are doing it, that are wearing a mask. The only place I wear one is the post office. That's it.
Yeah. This is the problem, is the compliance. And we've got to wake up and realize that these people are not geniuses. They're not scientists. They're not doctors. They're not people who really should be commanding us and issuing orders. And frankly, they don't have legal authority to do so. And we need to question this. And the very sad fact of it is exactly as you say, is the obedience, the compliance. That's what's hurting us because, you know, those of us who understand this problem and understand the medical issues and understand the ineffectiveness and hazards of these masks are outnumbered by these people who are blindly, mindlessly running around with a mask as if they're doing the right thing. And so we're outnumbered, you know, and it's going to be a very, very ugly day when all of these people find out that they've been making a mistake and they've been pressuring the rest of us to do the same inappropriately and unfairly.
And I've seen people actually get angry at others who don't have a mask on, as if they're somehow jeopardizing that person's health. It's terrible.
Right. And you simply say to them when they get angry, can you show me the scientific basis for wearing a mask? Do you know that? Are you a scientist? Are you a doctor? Are you a pathologist? Are you a microbiologist? Are you an immunologist? What are you? Someone whose governor told them to wear a mask, and you think you know that that's right? Not right.
Well, I just love your attitude. You're terrific.
You know, it's a question of health and safety, and, you know, there's a lot of people who are simply going down the wrong road and don't really understand why.
Right. Now, you have covered a lot of issues. You've talked about smart meters, which I've still avoided having one, and they haven't forced me to take. But I have to pay extra.
Yeah.
To have a smart.
That's called an opt-out, and that's something we don't recommend. I have a website which I mentioned earlier, which is emfhelpcenter.com. There's a link from our freedomtaker.com website right at the top. The emfhelpcenter.com website addresses exactly this and provides a lot of really good information for people who understand that there are hazards and harm with electronic utility meters and that they do need to do something about that and that their utility company will not help them do it. If you go to your utility company and say, I can show you that this radio frequency meter and this digital meter is harmful, it's a fire hazard, it's putting out dirty electricity, which makes you sick, it's putting out RF, which makes you sick, it's a surveillance device violating the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights, you can tell them all this, and they will come back and they will say, well, do you want electricity or not?
Right.
And so what you tell them is, yes, I want safe and lawful electricity. And, you know, they will write up to you presenting them with a notice of liability, proving that this thing is hazardous and harmful, proving that they are personally liable to pay for your damage. They will still require you to do that as a condition of having your electric service. And so what we did, because back in the old days, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we were able to get people to maintain their electromechanical meter and put off this utility company. Well, now the utility company is just like totally unreasonable, hardball, say, no, you're going to have your electronic utility meter or you're not going to have electricity. And so what we did was we developed a system, a series of steps of how to mitigate the hazard and harm of the electronic utility meter. And so that you could actually accept not just the opt-out meter, but the actual basic meter they offer. When you accept the opt-out meter, they're requiring you to sign all kinds of things to waive their liability and to sign away your rights in terms of who's going to have to pay for the damage this thing causes. If you look carefully at your opt-out contract, and sometimes they don't even show you the wording. Oh, you want the opt-out contract? Okay, they're doing this on the phone. You don't even see the contract, and you just approved it.
Right.
And they use that telephone call as your signature. And you haven't even seen the contract. And the contract says, I hereby waive my right for any damages due to any radiation issues or any other hazard or harm from the meter.
Sure.
Oh, really?
Yes, the last 2 hours today is Jerry Day. His websites are jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. And we were talking about smart meters, and I actually sent my utility company a letter, and that's how I have existed without a smart meter up to this point. But I, in an adjacent community, Naperville, There was a person that attempted to prevent a smart meter installation, and she got into quite a lot of trouble. I think they even put her in jail for a while. And so it's been pretty tough to try to avoid. But you say that there's ways of mitigating this.
Deanna, there were two women arrested on that day in Naperville.
Right.
One of them sued the police department for false arrest and won something like $100,000. You know, when someone comes on to your property, especially a law enforcement officer, to commit harm, you have got a case. And when they commit arrest in order to force you to accept that harm, you will get a settlement.
Wow.
If you, you know, have competent representation or whatever.
That wasn't publicized at all.
I'm sorry, I don't hear you very well. If you can be a little louder. What was that question?
Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't publicized much about.
Right, of course not.
Yes.
Right.
Interesting. Can you hear me better now?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, yeah, so anyway, I sent a letter, and I have avoided having a smart meter installed. But you say that there are ways that you can – I know that there are covers that you can put over them, but are those safe, or would it direct
– the covers, sometimes they call them Faraday cages or screens. They're not
right.
always the best idea. They're not always the best idea, and here's the reason. When you cover your – there's a transmitter in that utility meter, and you're covering it up so that it will be ineffective and not send out radiation. There's two problems. One is the radiation you're covering is the radiation going away from the house, not the radiation
right.
coming in the house. And
right.
the other problem is that it will defeat them getting picking up their data, and that could be termed tampering with your meter, and that's a violation of your easement. What some people do is put that on and maybe put a hole in it so that enough data can get out so they can read it, but it reduces the data. That's a little reduces the RF level. That's a little dangerous because the meters, like your cell phone, are designed that when they can't get a signal, they up their own power to try to get a signal.
Oh.
So what you're doing is you're causing the meter to increase its own power when you defeat it in that way. The best approach we found for shielding is to shield the inside of the house, shield the area between the utility meter and the living spaces, and not shield other areas, and try to let that signal go out. Now, of course, it's not ideal that you have a radio transmitter there and that it's putting out harmful radiation, radio frequencies. But like I say, most people don't have the option, the nuclear option, which is to simply shut off their account and go off-grid solar. And then you do certain things about mitigating the dirty electricity. I can talk about that. But as long as they're threatening to shut off your electricity, if you don't accept the digital meter, then the only reasonable way you can approach that is to just try to reduce and mitigate that. And that's what we're talking about at that website I was talking about at emfhelpcenter.com.
Right.
There's particular steps.
We're at the top of the hour. We will be right back, and we'll pick this up on the other side.
Republic Broadcasting Network.
All righty, we are back. And our guest is Jerry Day. His websites are jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. And we were talking about smart meters and how to mitigate them. I have Graham Stetzer filters on most of my outlets that I've tested, and so I guess that helps.
Well, it may or may not. There, the sensorizer filters have been controversial. There's some people who have had difficulties with those. And so, you know, we at EMF Help Center, we offer different solutions, but, you know, everyone can research and experiment with whatever they wish.
Right. Okay, you have a Power Perfect box?
Mm-hmm. That's a whole house line conditioner. So that people don't usually understand. They think that the radio frequencies are the big problem, and actually they're only 50% of the problem in terms of electromagnetic fields. The smart meters and the electronic utility meters have something in them called a switch mode power supply. And this is the little device they use to steal electricity from you to power the surveillance device in the utility meter. And the switching mode power supply acts like a disruptor to your incoming current. And it's like putting a stick in the stream. It creates turbulence of the electricity. And that becomes wasted electricity and electric fields projected from all your wiring throughout the house. Now, there are a lot of ways dirty electricity can be created, but none more egregious than putting a switching mode power supply at the head end of an individual house wiring circuit. This is extremely poor practice electric in terms of electrical engineering. But they all do it because they want to get that surveillance information, all of your activities inside your home, the time of day data, when you turn off and on all your appliances, what you're doing, who you are, what kind of personality you have, your psychological profile. They're putting all that together, and that's how they're
and
doing
they can,
it.
And they can do that with smart meters and...
Oh, yeah.
Or
that's
what
they're for. That's what electronic utility meters are for. Why would they need to put electronics in a utility meter? What possible reason would they have? It doesn't work as well. It's flammable. It bursts into flames. It has no surge protection because they can't put surge protection right there and protect. It's got little flammable circuits right there in the utility meter. They didn't have that in electromechanical meters for good reason. You don't want to put anything flammable right there. And you want to have robust surge protection. Well, if you have an electronic utility meter, you don't have robust surge protection. You don't have any surge protection. And they just decided to throw that out. And that was obviously something that has caused thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of house fires already. And so this is a surveillance program that is being done in violation of a lot of other requirements that they are supposed to be doing. But they just throw those out the window because they're government-protected monopolies. They're going to make more money on the surveillance data than they make on the electricity they're going to sell you. They've declared that openly in their meetings, in their conferences. And they are going to get this surveillance data even if they have to kill you to do it. And that is the attitude and moral integrity of your utility company these days, sad but true. But when they put that switch mode power supply into that meter and those electronic components, they disrupted your current and they created dirty electricity all over your house. It's called dirty electricity. It's electric fields being projected, being broadcast from the wiring in your house. So this is not something you can shield. It penetrates shielding.
Oh,
like
right.
Gravity.
It's in the walls. It's all over.
Yeah, it's in the wall all over your house. And so you cannot shield it. Well, even if it was coming from a single source, you couldn't shield it because it's electric fields. It's not radio frequencies. Transmitted radio frequencies can be shielded. Electric fields penetrate everything. So the only thing you can do about electric fields is reduce them and eliminate them from the source. And the way you do that is with a line conditioner, a good, well-made, well-designed line conditioner. And this one we have at emfhelpcenter.com is a whole house line conditioner. It's wired in right at your service panel. And it eliminates half the problem right there of your electronic utility meter, which is the dirty electricity, the other half being the radio frequencies, which you have to do shielding for. But that
now,
is how we recommend people do it.
Does this require an electrician to set this up?
It takes an electrician about half an hour to do it. It's a very simple operation. It's about three wires, and they put another breaker switch in your service panel. But it's something electricians do all day, every day. This particular model has full instructions for the electrician, and any basically trained electrician can do this very easily.
Okay. Wow.
But sounds you want to filter that, and then there are times when there are other things causing dirty electricity, and you can do plug-in filters. We have some high-performance plug-in filters. We don't recommend kind of little gadgety ones sometimes. We have a company in Montana called Static who makes a very high-performance, very effective plug-in line filter, which we have there. And That is all. Yeah, right below there, if you scroll down on the page, it's
Static plug-in line
filter. And you notice right on that, there's a plug, so you plug the device or appliance right through it. There are certain appliances that cause dirty electricity as well. Almost every house has a little problem with that in some way and could use line conditioning. And for instance, some of the appliances you might get that would cause dirty electricity would be a big refrigerator with a heavy motor, maybe a pool pump motor. Motors are quite often causing that. But large appliances like a plasma screen TV will cause dirty electricity. So you just look at a lot of cases where you're consuming a lot of electricity with one appliance and there's some kind of motor involved. Definitely you want to look at the dirty electricity problem that might be causing that. You can do with a plug-in line filter, or in most cases the whole house line conditioner will help that as well.
Okay. Now you talk about a TV. If I haven't turned mine on since March 28th, I should probably unplug it.
Oh yeah, get that thing on. Okay. So if it's a new TV, it's surveillance device as well. Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Yeah, I haven't turned it on. And it's kind of amazing. I haven't missed it at all.
Right. I had the same experience some years ago. I just said, I don't need this cable TV, and I'm going to stop paying whatever $50, $60 a month for this, and I never missed it one day.
Right. It's just after a few days you think, why did I ever spend all that time? I didn't actually watch it. I would just have it on in the background. But that's probably not a very good idea at all, electronically.
Not really. Yeah, not really. I just sort of feel, you know, there's no information here that I really need or that's helping me. The information is so controlled and so limited, you know, because they can't say anything bad about any of their sponsors, which you're talking about Big Pharma or Monsanto, you know, these companies that are doing hugely evil things. They can't say one thing bad about these companies. They can't say one thing bad about government, whatever it may be doing, right or wrong or otherwise. Because they're reliant on their broadcast license or business license for sustaining their business. So government tells them what they can and cannot say, whether directly or implicitly. And so, you know, they have to get whatever comes in from their AP Wire news feeds or their Reuters news feeds, which is already filtered for those purposes to protect government from its wrongdoing, to protect sponsors from their wrongdoing. And that's all you have left. So you can tell just by watching these TV programs. You feel it after a while. This is just not complete information. This is not good information. There's an agenda here.
And, right.
So not to say that there isn't on the Internet as well, but at least we can fish around still in the Internet, even though there's censorship there now as well. It's very unfortunate that Google and Facebook and Twitter and all these major platforms have decided to impose their ideological positions by censoring major amounts of material, especially conservative type of material.
Yeah, I don't use Google anymore, ever.
Right.
And I don't use Facebook. Wow. Okay.
Too bad, because right during the break, RBN said their Republic Broadcast Network has just opened a Facebook page.
And I'm thinking,
oh my
gosh. Don't personally use it.
Yeah.
But
it's a good opportunity. It's a good opportunity to share information, and I think everybody should use it, except if it continues and becomes successful, Facebook will certainly deplatform that.
Right.
So my advice to people on the Facebook page for RBN is use it while you can. And, right. And you will see exactly what you can and cannot do according to Mark Zuckerberg. When you start to deal in certain kinds of truth, Mark will shut you down.
Right. Wow. Oh, gosh, it's terrible. Now, you have a notice about census workers. And, of course, The reason that they initially started taking a census back in 1790 was to count the number of people for representation in Congress, apparently. But now they ask a lot of, well, a stranger, as you say, a stranger comes up and wants to ask you all these very probing questions. And,
yeah, are you able to go to the bathroom by yourself? Where do you buy your insurance? Yeah, it's a personal survey. It's a personal invasion. And the authority to conduct survey has nothing to do with that. Conduct census has nothing to do with that. They're not permitted to conduct personal surveys. They're not authorized to do so. Certainly not authorized to do so outside of the decennial year, the 1990, 2010, 2020. Those are the only years in which they're authorized to conduct any activity at all, and yet they conduct census activity every year under something called the American Community Survey.
Oh.
And they come around and they intimidate people and they threaten them that, well, this is a survey, this is the Census Bureau, and you're required by law to tell us all the answer to all these questions. A total lie. And we have very detailed information on what you are and are not legally required to provide for them. And basically it comes down to that all they're entitled to ask you is how many people live at the residence, not their names,
right.
Not their addresses, not anything, just how many people are there. Now, they're entitled to ask you that. They're not entitled to force you to tell them. So you could actually not provide any cooperation with the census whatsoever, and you're not actually technically violating any constitutional law. Now, they came up with this statute that tries to force people to answer questions for the census, and so they can come to your door and threaten you with some kind of federal prosecution if you refuse to cooperate, but they have never constitutionally vetted that law, and, of course, they could not do so. As soon as that law becomes challenged, it will fall, because it's in violation of what the census authorities are. And the census authorities are telling the government, you may count. That's all. You may count people. You may not require them to be counted. You may not require them to cooperate. You may not require them to participate. You certainly may not require them to provide personal information. Then none of that is in the Constitution. All they can do is what authorities are granted in the Constitution. And so when you read the sections of the Constitution regarding census, you realize this is an extremely limited authority. It's not even an authority. It's an assignment of a task. So they're assigned with a task, but they are not given authorities other than the standard authorities to complete that task. And so they came up with the idea that they could force people to provide personal information, and they passed the law. It just shows you what kind of nonsense your government gets up to when you're not watching. And they decided that they would go to people's homes and literally threaten them with prosecution for not providing personal information. And they should be told very, very firmly that they do not have authority to do that. And that is what our notice at freedomtaker.com is. It's an outline of that exact communication that you are. It says right there, here's a little card you can print out and hand them. You are authorized to ask me how many people live here. In my case, I would be happy to tell them that, because that's the census requirement so that they can appropriate seats in Congress. Okay, fine. I'm all right with that. So here's how many people live here. You must now leave. And I will not sign anything. No, I will not fill out forms for you. No, I will not provide personal information for you. You have no business asking for any of that. You may now leave. And, frankly, if they don't leave at that time, you call 911 and you say, I need someone taken into custody who refused to leave my property. And, of course, the police will laugh. If it's the census worker, and the police will say, oh no, we just do things that we've been told to by our watch commander. We haven't read the Constitution, so I'm sorry, we won't enforce that, your request for a home invader. Everybody's finding out the hard way that the police kind of don't do what we think they're supposed to be doing, protecting and serving. They don't do that. They're protecting and serving themselves most of the time these days. And it's pretty pathetic, the kind of service we're getting out of our police and our sheriffs. There's a few like Sheriff Richard Mack who understand what the constitutional purpose of law enforcement is. It's to protect the public, not the government. But most police have forgotten that fact.
Right. Exactly. Let's see. I was going to ask you something. Have an email question from a gentleman. Can smart meters be used to spy on people in their homes visually? In other words, if somebody were getting dressed or something, could smart meters actually view that person getting dressed?
Technically, they could, but you'd have to have a pickup device in your bedroom or your bathroom, and then you'd have to have a transmitting device that would transmit visual information to the electronic utility meter. Now, they're doing that with your television. They're doing that with your webcam. They're doing that other ways, and there's no particular reason to think they would be doing visual surveillance with a utility meter. Utility meter surveillance is actually in some ways more invasive than visual surveillance. I like to say if you put a camera in your house, you would get less data from that camera than you would get from your utility meter, because your utility meter is telling them every time any electrical device is turned on or off anywhere in the house. And it's also now transmitting actual metadata like your thermostat. It will tell the electric company what the temperature is in your house. And it will tell the electric company the efficiency of the appliances that you're using. There's a lot more and more all the time. There's data that they can collect through this Internet of Things. And when anyone designs an electrical device, they know now that they can put in a circuit that will provide personal surveillance data on you that you don't intend for anyone to get. And the thermostat is a good example. You know, it's telling someone else what temperature it is in your house. Now, that doesn't seem like it's too invasive or whatever, but I'll promise you, when you combine that data with all the other consumption data you use and certain data that's now coming from the smart refrigerators and the smart this and the smart that, they have an absolutely perfect high-resolution profile of the people who are living in your home, and that is not just a profile of what you buy and what you use and how you live, but that's a profile of who you are, what kind of person you are. And when you look at the data that can be generated by electronics now, consumer electronics, and that data can be transferred to an unauthorized third party like a utility company or like the police. Of course, why do the utility companies want this data? Because they monetize it by selling it to police departments, insurance companies, you name it. The government for any reason, tax collectors, you know, people who do not have your interests at heart are able to purchase this information, this very high resolution information, and know everything about you.
Wow. All righty, we're going to a quick break, and then we'll open the phone lines for some questions. Be right back. We are back with our guest, Jerry Day. His websites are jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. And at freedomtaker.com, please, by all means, download the document, the vaccine document. It's a conditional acceptance of vaccination agreement between vaccine providers and vaccinated party. And it is just a really remarkable document. So please do download that, print it off, and it's wonderful. It's fabulous. We do have some callers lining up. Would you like to take a call?
Sure.
Okay. Chance in West Virginia.
Hello, Deanna. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Day, I have a couple of questions for you about the census, if you can answer them for me, please, because I don't want those jackasses at my doorstep. One day I looked out. Excuse me?
What is your first name?
Chance.
Chance, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. One day about, I would say maybe a month ago, one of those fools left this census on my porch, and it was in one of those, you know, those plastic bags that you hang on the doorknob, except they didn't hang it on the doorknob. They laid it on the floor of the porch. Now, my question to you is, Mr. Day, I've noticed on the whole census, there's only 9 questions. They're kind of personal, but I noticed there's no a date that says it has to be sent back by. Are you aware of that?
Well, yes, and they don't even tell you who they're giving it to. If you'll notice that it says to resident, it doesn't say to Chance or anybody there. They don't know who you are. It's just addressed to the resident, and yes, they
exactly.
don't have a name or a date.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm in a rural area. So what they have, it doesn't even say resident. It has my address, though, which is strange.
Right.
And I'm way up on a mountaintop.
Well, in their eyes, it's not your address. It's an address. So as long as your address has existed, they've had that address because it's an address. They just have addresses. So they don't know whose address they have.
Oh, yeah, but can't they look up property records? I mean, isn't that easy?
Yeah, but are they... And for some reason, they don't want to do that. And I think the reason is because they're trying to get a current census where if you just moved out and somebody else just moved in, they want to know who the new person is and they want to update their records. So they're not, you know, they're not going out looking at what other records that might be outdated. They're trying to get fresh new data.
All right. Now, my question's for you, Mr. Day, if you could answer these, please. With everything that's going on nowadays, I'm not even sure if I want to fill it out. What happens if I don't mail it back? Will these jackasses appear
legally,
on my doorstep?
Yes, they will. They will visit you a couple of times or contact you a few times, and they will even try to intimidate you and threaten you with prosecution. And you know, this happened to me in 2010, and I just very clearly and very firmly informed them that they have no constitutional authority to prosecute anybody for refusing to participate with the census. And
I don't allow myself to be intimidated by anybody. That's just not going
right,
to work.
Right.
You were saying, sir? I'm sorry.
I was in a, at the time I lived in a city. I was in Burbank, California, and so they sent two men. The first. Census worker was a single female, and the second they sent, or second or third time, was two men who were a little bit upper in age, a little bit larger in size, and very much trained to intimidate. And you know, they learned that what they were doing was not appropriate and not legal, and they learned that from me. So you know, we have to know who we are, and we have to know what our rights are, and we have to be ready to express them. When the time comes.
All right, now here's my question for you, Mr. Day. I heard you mentioned earlier that all you have to fill out is how many people were living or staying in the house. That's it, correct?
That's all they're authorized to request.
Okay. All right. So question two is additional people. I don't have to answer that, correct?
Well, when you say additional, you mean guests? People who are visiting temporarily? Or
additional people. Well, it says whether additional people staying here on April 1st, 2020 that you did not include. That I don't have to answer
okay.
that, correct? All right.
Well, be careful because you don't have to answer anything. This is not, there's no federal authority to require you
yeah, but
to
see, the
answer
thing
something.
Is, Mr. Day, the thing is I don't want these jackasses back at my house. I would rather put down... The number of people, I don't want to put my name, I didn't even ask for a telephone number, mind you. Person sex, I'm not going to answer that. Person sex, person's race.
Come up with a number, okay? How many people you want to tell them lives at the address, and it's your choice. It's your authority. If you are the property owner, you're the occupant, you're the one they're asking, you're the one who has the authority there. So you know, they're saying, under your authority, how many people do you want to tell us is living there? And you say, under my authority, I want to tell you this. It's you know, so.
Yeah, but see, but if you answer that way, if you put more people, then it goes to person number two, person number three. They have a page for each person. See what I'm saying? In other words,
they just get a number. They don't get any information. They get a number. This is how many people live here. Goodbye.
All right. So I don't have to answer. I don't have to answer person's race, person's sex, person's ethnic origin, phone number. None of that crap. I don't have to answer any of that. Correct?
No, well, of course not, but that's according to the Constitution.
Okay.
Now, I strongly suggest you go to freedompicker.com and look at, right near the top of the homepage, there's a yellow box with your response to the Census Department, and look at what we've suggested as possible responses, and look over that and make sure you're comfortable with that, because you're telling them what the law is, you're telling them the limits of their authority, and, you know, you have to be ready to act firmly with these people, because these people are trained to act firmly with you. So I will. Right. So
I just don't want them at my doorstep again. This is why you know, I'll fill in a number of people and that's it. I'm not.
Okay. Thank you, Chance. I believe we'll go on to the next caller. So I think he's answered your question. Okay, let's take Fred in Iowa.
Fred?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Hi, Fred.
Yep.
How are you?
I haven't been listening to RV in about 3 weeks. Terrific show. I missed your day. I'm going to give you a count on what happened to me. When a census character comes to my house, I went out on the front lawn and two lawn chairs, and we had a hell of a discussion there. And he tried to goad me into giving a census, and I wouldn't do it. Now, Thursday, I got four identical letters from the power company here in Iowa. And I'll just say it says, Dear customer, our records show that you do not want a smart meter. If we do not hear from you within 30 days, we will install a smart meter. Okay, for the last couple of years, any power company person that's came to my house, I told them, I absolutely do not want a smart meter. And then I give him a lecture on what I knew, but I've got your website out, and I will be studying it diligently. And I won't take up any more time. But
Fred, stay on the line for one second. Hey, Fred, stay on the line for 1 second because there's a little confusion here. If they are offering to allow you to not have an electronic utility meter, if you tell them that is what you want, then you should take advantage of that. And most utility companies are not allowing that. So if they say they are allowing that, you need to put your refusal of that meter into writing and send it to them by certified mail and address it to the CEO of that company, that utility company. And that means just saying, I hereby refuse an electronic utility meter. I require a safe and lawful electromechanical meter, the old-fashioned kind like my grandma had, and that is my position. And this is my name and address and account number, and address that to the CEO and send it by certified mail. Keep copies of it. Keep copies of the mail receipts. And that is your notice. See, what you've done is you've verbally noticed them, and you haven't noticed them in writing, and they have to have something on the record. But once that's on the record, and if they're offering to let you keep that electromechanical meter, then you can do that. Most utility companies don't allow that, so we've come up with different tactics. You know, kind of a notice of liability approach. and self-mitigation of the harm and hazard. But you don't, you may not have to do that. So go at that right away. Send them that refusal of that meter in writing to the chief executive officer of that utility company, and just see how you do there. Because that's, if they're offering that, if they say if you refuse, what they mean is if you refuse on the record. You can't just verbally, you know, throw somebody off your lawn, and you know there's no record of that.
Thank God you give me this information, and I didn't hang up. I was going to go to opt out and contract, have it sent to me. But you explained it to me in detail, and I will try to get that letter off Monday and certified and everything, and maybe two or three letters. But I
sure. And if they're offering you an opt out contract, look at that very carefully, and what meter they're going to give you, because that may be a Trojan horse right there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, and God bless both of you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you, Fred.
All righty. Now, there's another. You have two vaccine letters here. You have a refusal of vaccination. Then you have another one. It's called vaccination refusal of vaccination. Then the vaccination notice.
Yeah, those are just slightly different approaches, and one of them is a free download document. The other one is you can just copy-paste it right off the screen. So you can look at both of those documents and decide which one feels more appropriate to you.
Right. Fabulous information, and certainly I like the one where they actually have to sign, where you have the 24 points. And Wow. That is fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take Mark in Philadelphia. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hello, Deanna. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Deanna, for being there, and thank you for your guest. He's very clear, to the point, and straightforward. We very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
I haven't shared this with any other host, but you know, I'm a veteran. And I was, a few months ago, I was in a part of a veteran's shelter, and now it's sponsored by the fund, directly funded by the VA, and supposed to be overseen by the VA. But I'm going to tell you what went down. Five of us, and there's approximately 50 guys in the shelter, and it's a nice building. It's a nice, place as far as that goes, but the way it's run is ridiculous. So there's approximately 50 of us there, 25 on the third floor, 25 on the fourth floor. Anyway, five of us on the fourth floor, ended up testing positive for coronavirus, and then they quarantined four of us. And anyway, two of us ended up having heavy duty symptoms. And now, mind you, the facility did not, and we figured out that we caught it from a staff person who brought it into us. Okay, because no guys on the third floor tested positive. So the thing is, we were heavily restricted when the shutdown went down. They restricted us where we couldn't even go outside at all. And then they allowed us out for 30 minutes, and it was just ridiculous. And before that, I was very active. I was very good health. I ended up getting this stuff, and I was in the hospital for a week, and then they transferred me to a rejuvenation place where I could recuperate. Now, when I left that hospital, they did not test me, because I asked them if they were going to test me. And they said, well, what test? And I'm like, what test? I mean, are you going to retest me to see that I'm okay? Are you going to test for antibodies? No, we're not going to test. So then they sent me to the rejuvenation place. I was there for 2.5 weeks. And before I left there, I asked if they were going to test me, and they didn't even ask how I was doing. And they were going to discharge me, and they didn't retest me either. So then I actually had, because I still had a symptom of dizziness, okay? So then I contacted the local health department for Philadelphia, and a doctor ended up calling me back, and she was rushing me on the phone, and I told her, I said, look, I believe I still have symptoms, because when I try to walk, you know, and I'm trying to get back active, I'm dizzy. So long and short, what I figured out is that it's all a statistic, okay? And, you know, like you mentioned and others have mentioned that, you know, if you've had the flu, you might test positive for this COVID. So, even after the fact, I think the whole deal is about statistics, pumping up the fear, exaggerating the statistics, And by the way, the VA hospital here, which is connected to the University of Pennsylvania, it's a pretty good hospital. They weren't admitting any veterans for COVID at all. And if, and they wouldn't see anybody for anything else, unless it was an extreme emergency. Everything was COVID or nothing. So if you had something that was pretty important, you wouldn't be able to see. They tell you you have to come back in like 3 weeks. So anyway, and I also found out that the state of Pennsylvania put forth like a 15-page document about immunity for any place that might be a cause, that might have caused something to happen. And I believe in this case, we five veterans, the two of us that had extreme symptoms, was brought into us by the staff. I don't know. I just sharing that with you. And then also, you know, getting your comment and, you know, your host and see what, I mean, your guest host,
you know,
and see what,
you know, that, you have to say. What you've made me think of here is that when you, perhaps one of the reasons they didn't want to test you after the fact is because statistically, once you've had the virus, which they would have determined that you had because you had symptoms, or whatever the pathogen is, whatever the pathology is, once you've had that, technically, after 14 days, you now have antibodies. You now are immune to it. You now are on the other side of it. And so there is, according to their medical policies and practices and theories, there is no purpose once you have been affirmatively diagnosed and once you have been affirmatively viewed with presentation of symptoms and once you have affirmatively gotten out of that and the symptoms have gone away, then you would have to, by definition, have antibodies. You would have to, by definition, have immunity, and there would be no further chance of you recontracting that or having what they would consider some sort of lagging symptoms. And if I were your physician, which I'm not a physician, but if I were your physician, I would hope that I would ask you about the dizziness and say, well, this could be a whole other problem, and it could have nothing to do with COVID or any even bacterial or viral infection. It could be something related to a neurological issue or something. You know, veterans have been subject to a lot of physical trauma, brain trauma, this and that.
Right.
And, of course, dizziness could be a factor completely apart from the whole COVID thing. So that is something you should have received attention and care on separate from the COVID thing. Now, of course, when they clear out the whole hospital and say all we're going to do is deal with COVID now, then if you have issues other than COVID, you don't get any help, whether it's VA or anywhere else, any other hospital.
Right.
So this is obviously a big flaw in our medical system, in our theories, in our public policies.
So one of my symptoms that came on early on was, dizziness to the max. Like, I could stand up and almost fall over. I couldn't even walk across the room. I mean, it zapped my energy. I had headaches, and then I got, I lost my appetite completely. It zapped my energy, and I had dizziness. So that's why I was thinking that it was still a little bit of that was hanging on. But I also told me that I had viral pneumonia when they took a CT scan and then they did the X-rays, chest X-rays. They said I had viral pneumonia, and they showed it to me on the deal. And so anyway, I just want to let you know that, you know, let you know, Deanna, that that's happened to one of your listeners here. And, the thing is that the facility we were at, which is funded by the VA and supposed to be overseen by the VA, although they don't have any employees there and they don't have any medical staff, they did not test their staff at all when this came on. And most of the guys that are at that shelter are older. They're like 70. You know, they're Vietnam vets. And we were all, you know, we were told, oh, my God, people that are older, that, you know, they're real susceptible to this stuff. They did not take any precautions at all. And then a staff person got it, and I guess he didn't stay home instead of staying home like he should have. But he was missing for several weeks, and we wondered where he went. And then I found out later that he had went to the hospital. And so anyway, that's what's happening, you know, here, and it's just ridiculous, but nobody's responsible for exposing us, and we, you know, so anyway, so I appreciate you being there, and I appreciate your guest host there, and he's got some really keen information. I'm going to go to his website and check it out. So thank you very much, Deanna.
You know, what state and city are you in? If we may,
I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you. There's so many things that are happening to people, and as he indicated, there are people who actually have other things that are wrong with them that are not receiving appropriate treatment because they are concentrating so heavily on COVID, which...
Yeah, the public policies are completely out the window, and it has something to do with some kind of agenda, whether it's an economic agenda. You know, this is a convenient way to blame economic collapse on a pathogen, which takes all the responsibility off of the public officials, takes all the responsibility off the banks, responsibility off of our failed currency system, and blames a germ. So this is obviously a scapegoat, and whether or not it was intended to be that way, it will be used that way. And so that means that policies start to get skewed toward that type of approach. And, the idea of refusing all other treatment beside COVID in almost every hospital, at least for a period of time, utterly idiotic public policy. And it's, on the surface, it seems like our public officials have just lost their marbles. But when you look underneath, you go, well, they're playing some other agenda. And, we're getting very bad information.
Exactly. Wow. Okay, do we have any other callers? Okay, you also have a refusal of medical testing, which you can just copy-paste.
That's if somebody comes to you and says, oh, I'm going to force you to take a COVID test to get on this airplane. I'm going to force you to take a COVID test to get a driver's license. That's when you want to say, hey, you can't stipulate, medical procedure, and deny me the right to get my driver's license or to the right to travel or whatever. And so it's going to be a battle because, it comes down to, in the case of air travel, there's a private company involved who can refuse you service for things like that. Certainly the DMV should not be doing that. But then the DMV is claiming public necessity or whatever, the health issues and the policies. So they're following the lead of the officials. And, so you want to fight back. You want to come back with something strong and something legal and something rational. And you say, no, I'm not interested in your medical test and I need my driver's license today, and, make it very firm and give it some legal, support. And so that's what our form and our documents are designed to do.
Right. And you have so many documents, even a document to the meter installer
right.
you have covered so many bases here. I'm just amazed.
Well, this is the idea of taking your power and realizing you do have authority as a property owner. You do have authority as a living human being. You do have authority as having rights over your own life and your own destiny. And it's really what it's come down to is many of us have just forgotten that we have the right and actually the obligation to assert our rights at certain times with certain people. And many of us have been just conditioned to think that if it's a government official or somebody with a badge, we just have to do whatever they say. That's not how it is because nowadays these people with badges and these public officials are serving very, very dark agendas and very, very inappropriate, illegal activity. And we have to be a little bit more informed about the law. We have to be a little bit more brave and courageous about how we stand up when our rights are being violated. We have to be willing to consider the idea that a public official may not be a lawful actor.
Right. And of course, we've all kind of grown up looking to authority figures as people that we should believe and accept their authority. If you put on a white coat and have a stethoscope, then you're an authority. But you can reject that because, after all, it is our body. Let's see.
Well, and your family, when it comes to whether or not your children should be vaccinated, and if you are familiar with some of the health damage done to children, literally by the millions, and much of this very much on the record and very much
acknowledged by the authorities, and they just say, well, yes, we're hurting you, but we have this system where we'll compensate you for that damage. Of course, we'll allow the pharmaceutical company to be immune from the liabilities, but we'll give you some sort of a compensation if your child is harmed or injured and you go through the trouble of suing us, then yes, we'll pay you something for that damage. You know, this is the system we have, and it's utterly ridiculous. People should be informed of the risks and hazards, and they should be very free to refuse these treatments and these things, obviously, when there's a hazard to their safety.
Exactly. Excuse me. Now, if you scroll down, you'll find Barry Trower.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Barry Trower, if you can find him on the web, he's a tremendous source of information about microwave dangers, hazards. He's a microwave weapons expert and worked with the United Kingdom for many years in that field. And when he saw what smart meters were and what frequencies they were transmitting and what power levels they were transmitting, he said, this is a weapon. You can't put this on someone's house. This is going to destroy people's DNA. This is going to give birth defects to your young daughter, your young daughter's children. So your grandchildren will have birth defects because your young daughter was sleeping next to a smart meter.
Wow.
And he has very compelling information about why that is true and how that works. Very, very good. So it's BarrieTrower, Barry Trower. And if you look up his name on YouTube or some of the other platforms, BitChute or, you know, some of these other Brighteon, you will find Barry Trower videos. I highly recommend them.
Okay, we'll be right back, Dan. All right, we are back with our guest, Jerry Day. And his website is jerryday.com and freedomtaker.com. You also have a notice to healthcare provider, and there have been times when people have gone to the emergency room and the physician doesn't really tell you what they're planning to charge you, and then you get this bill for $2,500 for a visit to the ER. So you have a notice to healthcare provider download link. You've covered everything. It's just amazing how much work you've put into all of this. Are you there?
You hear me?
Yeah. Okay, now I can.
Okay.
Okay.
That notice to healthcare provider is very powerful because, you know, they get the idea that they can just send you a bill later for any amount they can make up out of thin air. And what that notice to healthcare provider is I agree to receive your services as long as you agree to tell me in advance of all charges and to not provide those charges unless I approve them. And that under the understanding that you will not be paid unless I approve the charges in advance prior to commitment. And so you have to be informed of the charges. You have to agree to them. And, you know, whether they are paid by insurance or Medicare or your own cash out of your pocket, you have to be permitted to know what those charges are. And this is what this notice does. And when I've used this notice, over my lifetime, I've had two ER visits. The first one cost $2,800. The second one, which I used this notice, cost $25. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
My number's off. It's $250. I'm sorry, $250. But the first one was $2,800. The second one, I brought this notice in, and I said, you must disclose all charges in advance, and I must approve those charges in order for them to be payable. And they didn't have a way to do that, and they simply said, okay, pay $250, and that's your ER visit today. And I was in there for hours. And so, you know, when you require, and you can present this to any physician, any medical health care provider, and you say, if you do not provide
disclosure of your fees, and if I do not approve them, then they will not be paid. That simple notice to the receptionist, hopefully you have a witness that shows that you gave it to them, some way that you could sort of prove that you presented this. That's all you need to do. And even if you don't have a way to prove it, present it. And then act on that basis so that, you know, you get your bill later and you say, I'm sorry, this charge was not disclosed to me when I was in your office. I did not approve this. And as you know, here's a copy of this document that I gave you at the time. It shows very clearly that it will not be honored or paid if I did not approve it. So, you know, it's just like walking out of a hardware store and all of a sudden they say, oh, you just bought a leaf blower.
Right.
You say, well, I don't want a leaf blower and I didn't pick up a leaf blower. They say, well, yeah, we just sold you one and you owe us the money for that. That's what these doctors are doing to you. And they shouldn't be allowed to do it. It's unethical. It's wrong. There's no way people can pay these amounts. And, you know, we have the insurance industry to thank for this nonsense. But, because they say, oh, well, your insurance pays it. What do you care? Well, I pay insurance premiums, and that's what's paying for this. So, yes, I do care. And even in the case of Medicare, that's the case. So so that notice to healthcare professionals, or healthcare provider, is very powerful and very important for any medical visit.
Really? Well, most of the time when people get to the ER, they think, oh, now I'm in safe hands, and they just don't think about these things.
Right, right. And you're not going to like the bill you're going to get.
No, even if your insurance pays for it. Well, thank you so much, Jerry, for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Deanna. Very much a pleasure.
Take care.
You too. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.